This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Ohio voters last week delivered a decisive victory for abortion rights in passing a ballot measure enshrining reproductive autonomy, coming just months after voters defeated a ballot measure seen as a proxy for anti-abortion conservatives. The vote last Tuesday was a strong indicator that Americans, even in states led by Republicans, oppose abortion bans. How did organizers approach Ohio's abortion battle? And more importantly, what does it mean for the 2024 elections? My guest is Susan Rincunas. She's a reporter covering abortion and politics. Her work has appeared in Jezebel, where she was a senior reporter, as well as The Guardian, NBC News, Elle, Marie Claire, The Cut, and more. Welcome to the program, Susan.
Thanks for having me.
So before we get to what happened last Tuesday, let's start in August for those who weren't necessarily paying attention to the minutiae of Ohio politics. There was a ballot measure in Ohio that wasn't directly related, at least overtly, to abortion, but it was still seen as a victory for the abortion rights movement. Give us a nutshell description of what happened there and how it laid the groundwork for the latest ballot measure.
And you're right, it absolutely was a proxy vote on abortion, because the Ohio state legislature only decided to hold the special election in August after it was clear that organizers in the state were moving to have a November election to codify abortion rights in the state. And the Ohio state legislature chose to do this despite passing a law the previous session that banned special elections in the summer, unless they were necessary to fill a congressional vacancy. And the really interesting part is that they wanted to increase the threshold that it would take for citizen-led ballot initiatives to pass from 50% up to 60%. And there had even been polling that voters in the state were around that margin in support of abortion rights, you know, high 50s, low 60s. So it seemed like this was very much an effort to squash the abortion ballot measure in November. A lot of legislators said that they had nothing to do with each other. It was just, you know, a common sense reform. But the Ohio Secretary of State, Frank LaRose, did tell people in a closed door dinner that it was 100% about trying to block the abortion amendment.
It's interesting to block the right to an abortion. Republicans resort to basically undermining democracy.
Absolutely. And you have to undermine democracy in order to pass unpopular legislation, whether it's at the state level undermining it, or things like the Supreme Court gutting the Voting Rights Act and blessing gerrymandering, and decisions like Citizens United allowing more dark money. So you're right that it's definitely tied to democracy. And the other thing I'll add is that organizers in the state were then very energized and letting people know that their legislators were trying to silence them. And that helped the No on Issue 1 campaign in August pass with about 57% support. Organizers were even telling people over the summer when they were door knocking, it's no now in August, but it's yes in November. And they were telling people they were going to have to vote twice because of this attempt to thwart the ballot measure. So the organizers were doing that work all summer, but they did have to then go back out in September, August, and early November to remind people that they had to vote again in order to protect their rights.
Interesting. So the two measures were linked. Was there any indication that, and I'm seeing some journalists point out that there's some sense that between August and November, support for the right to an abortion might have even increased a little bit in counties that voted for, there were a majority of counties that voted no in August, voted yes in November, and then some.
I saw that there was a stat also that 18 counties that went for Donald Trump in the 2020 election also voted yes on issue one in November. I do know there was some polling that showed that support was even higher for the November ballot measure. I saw polls as high as 58 or I believe even 60%. So there were certainly indication that people were strongly pro-choice, and you can tell why the legislators wanted to raise the threshold to 60% because they felt that that was the only way to stop this voice from the people on abortion.
So what exactly did issue number one enshrine now that it's passed with nearly 60% support? What does this mean for Ohio? There was a ban in place in Ohio, or at least in the works.
So the first thing I'll say is that it's nothing changes for 30 days after the election. There's nothing new right now. So issue one would amend the state constitution after 30 days after the vote to enshrine the right to not only make the choice to have an abortion, but also choices around contraception, miscarriage care, fertility treatment, that kind of thing. And you're talking about a previous ban in the state. Yes, in 2019, the current governor, Mike DeWine, signed a 6-week abortion ban, which is before most people know they're pregnant. And it was blatantly unconstitutional at the time because Roe v. Wade still stood. That ban snapped back into effect after the Dobbs decision because there was no Roe v. Wade to prevent it from taking effect. And the abortion was banned in the state of Ohio for 82 days. I know that number because organizers were telling people exactly what was going on in the state during that time. And that ban got blocked eventually, but it's been sort of waiting like the sword of Damocles over people's heads. And campaigners on the conservative side, on the anti-abortion side, were kind of ignoring that that ban existed when they were telling people to vote no on issue one. They were telling people, oh, abortion is legal through the 22nd week of pregnancy here. You know, if you pass this, that doesn't give the state legislature any chance to weigh in. Well, of course, they were ignoring that the legislature already passed a ban in 2019. And if issue one didn't pass by voters, it made it all the more likely that the Ohio State Supreme Court was going to let the 6-week ban take effect permanently. So the next question that you and listeners would probably have is, okay, what's going to happen with that ban? There was a hearing in late September about the 6-week ban at the state Supreme Court, and they have not issued a ruling. So we're still waiting to hear their opinion on that. But regardless, if they try to say that the ban takes effect, then advocates on the pro-choice side can say, well, the voters just passed issue one, state constitution protects abortion. So no, it can't take effect. Some people would hope that the state Supreme Court just says on its own that the ban can't take effect. But there are conservatives in Ohio who are already trying to fight the results of this amendment passing. So it's not a given that the state Supreme Court will just block the ban on its own.
Right. They're saying that the legislature would have the right to implement it. They're saying that that voters don't get to decide because it's a God-given right of Republicans to restrict abortion, which is, you know, Taliban logic, right? It's a God-given right to restrict what whole groups of people can do. Therefore, democracy has no bearing. So going back to what you were mentioning earlier, the sort of misleading ways in which Republican advocates of an abortion ban were resorting to deception to try to convince voters to vote no on issue one last week. How did the pro-choice organizers on the ground counter that? It's a challenge when your opponent seems to have few scruples because they're motivated by some divine power. Well, give me a sense of the kind of organizing that you know of that went into this victory.
I know that they were countering these statements that Republicans and conservatives were making and reminding folks about the 6-week ban that was waiting in the wings, basically, to take effect. So Governor Mike DeWine was talking about how if issue one passed, there would be a chance that Ohio could start doing an abortion procedure that's been banned at the federal level for more than 15 years. And so I saw a lot of pushback on that as well, that he was just trying to scare people and not making any logical sense because federal laws trump state laws. So I know people were passing out information talking about what the amendment actually said. That's the other thing. They were pointing out the language of the amendment and showing people the things Republicans are saying are not what's going to happen.
Do you think that Ohio, and I should say a sort of related election set of election results in Virginia, where Republicans who were campaigning on abortion bans lost, do you think that those should give the Republicans pause that abortion bans are not a winning issue?
The active word in that question was should. It should give them pause. I don't think it will. I think that it's been proven time and time again. There have been 7 statewide direct votes on abortion since the Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade, and the pro-choice side has won in all 7 of them. And Ohio just became the first Republican-leaning state to affirmatively codify abortion rights in its state constitution. So that in itself should wake people up to the fact that even Republican voters, independent voters oppose these efforts. They will create a coalition to create a majority to oppose these efforts, right? And it should humble them, but I don't think it will. And I think that Republicans will still be campaigning on abortion bans. They will probably attempt to recreate the Virginia strategy of saying we should have a common sense, I'm putting common sense in air quotes, reasonable in air quotes, limit at 15 weeks of pregnancy, because that is what some high profile anti-abortion groups want them to do. It's not working out for them. I also think that you'll see at the presidential level, people dancing around the issue in the vein of what Donald Trump has been doing, saying that, well, we'll figure it out, we'll come up with a good compromise, and not landing on a specific policy at the federal level, because they know it's unpopular. I mean, you've seen this from Nikki Haley. She keeps saying we need to find consensus on this issue, and nothing's going to pass that doesn't get 60 votes in the Senate. And I think that that's what they're telling voters now, and it's not what would happen if and when they were in office, because they can do things beyond having legislation passed by Congress in order to restrict abortion at the federal level.
Seems as though they thought that being overt about their intentions on abortion would win Republicans votes, because the anti-abortion constituency, small as it is, has been extremely vocal, extremely well organized, and, you know, really hasn't faced enough vociferous opposition from Democrats. So perhaps Republicans thought that this would be that issue, but now maybe they are going to pivot to how they talk about things like Social Security and Medicare, which is out of both sides of their mouth, affirming that people have the right to these things, but then saying, you know, using double speak to indicate that actually, if given the chance, they would cut those benefits. And so, you know, which is the sort of scarier thing, right, for voters to have to contend with when they're not wearing their politics on their sleeve. It's a harder battle to fight.
I absolutely agree with you. I think it is scary, even nefarious, if people at the presidential level are trying to allay people's fears that, oh, they're not focused on abortion. They're not trying to pass a national abortion ban. You can vote for us as Republicans if you're concerned about, you know, any number of things, the economy, inflation, immigration, the other issues that people rightfully care about, right? But I think literally any vote for a Republican, either in Congress, the House, the Senate, or the presidential level, means that you're supporting someone who will be working to restrict abortion at the federal level. It's just a matter of how onerous the restriction will be. Will it be a 15-week ban? Will it be a 6-week ban? Will it be a total ban?
Now, you pointed out on Twitter that both Mike Pence and Tim Scott, two Republican contenders for president, have pulled out of the race. They were also both extremely overtly anti-abortion. And also, of course, in Virginia, we saw the resounding defeat of Glenn Youngkin, who is now reconsidering his presidential bid. Does the current political landscape since the Dobbs decision have a bearing, you think, on the Republican presidential field next year, and in general, the politics around abortion in 2024?
It's a great question. I do think that specifically Mike Pence and Tim Scott were championing the 15-week ban again, and they both dropped out. I can't say that 100% of the reason they dropped out is because of their support for that. They were obviously both flawed candidates in their own way. But what I do think we're going to see is people on the Republican side sort of ignoring the messaging advice from the anti-abortion groups like Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life, or Students for Life, that are pushing them to go vocally very hard on a federal abortion ban. And the politicians aren't stupid. They know that voters don't like that. And Donald Trump has known that for a long time, which is why he's even said after the 2022 midterms that he thought that abortion was part of the reason why the party did so poorly. So I think that it's still gonna be a strong undercurrent in the race. I think we're just going to see a lot more of that talking out of both sides of their mouths, like you mentioned before.
And finally, do you think the Democrats are taking the right lessons from the elections this year for next year? They, vote. It's one thing for Democratic identifying voters to organize around the poll. It's around the polls. It's another thing for Democratic elected officials to stick firm to their ideals. And I'm wondering if you think that they're taking their lessons from what happened this year.
Well, we're going to have to wait and see about that. But the one thing I'll note is these statewide ballot measures on abortion, including in Ohio, have all performed better than Democratic politicians, all of them. They all overperformed Joe Biden's numbers. So I think that it just shows people are really supportive of abortion access, and it doesn't necessarily mean that that is a slam dunk for Democratic victory in the future. Because even Ohio, in the 2022 midterms, Tim Ryan was on the ballot and ran as a pro-choice Senate candidate, and he lost to J.D. Vance. Meanwhile, that same state turned around and passed issue one by almost 57% to 43%. So I think that Democrats can't rest on their laurels after this victory in Ohio and the other victories. I think that they should really internalize what they're seeing and hearing from voters. And they should be really thinking about how they can engage these voters beyond promises. Like, Joe Biden has said things like, send me a Democratic House, Democratic Senate, and we'll codify Roe v. Wade. Okay, what happens if you don't win the Senate because of some of these challenges we've talked about with statewide races? What can you do to protect abortion access in that scenario? And these are things that the Biden campaign should be telling people now, and especially in 2024, if they want these people, if they want Democrats to vote, if they want independents to vote for them.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Susan, for joining us today. Where can people find your work? I mentioned you were a senior reporter at Jezebel. Very sadly, Jezebel is no more. I imagine that you're looking for a place to land.
I am, and I'll be freelancing in the meantime until finding another full-time job reporting on abortion, which is the biggest story of the 2024 election. And I'm on most social platforms with the handle Susan Rincunas, so you can follow me there.
Well, we put it out there into the universe. Good luck to you, Susan. I wish you the best.
Thank you very much.
My guest has been Susan Rincunas. She's a reporter covering abortion and politics. Her work has appeared in Jezebel, where up until Jezebel dissolved, she was a senior reporter. She's also seen her work appear in The Guardian, NBC News, Elle, Marie Claire, The Cut, and more. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, racial justice editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org and watch it on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.